Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 5, chapter 1, Is Levin Gonna Find God? This chapter foreshadows what we are going to be subjected to, many sentences, paragraphs, and oh my god, more chapters on this subject, says Swim, said the mama fishy. These lines had me smiling. He was quite surprised to her opposition to it. This decided expression of her wish surprised Levin. Can't wait to see what other ways Kitty will surprise Levin once they are married. N.M. Broad said, I've just started reading Master and Margarita by Bulgakov, and funnily enough, it's so similar to the start of part 5 of Anna Karenina. The existence of God, doubts in faith, etc. Has anyone else read this? Fully expecting it to be way outside my comfort zone. Interested to know, is Anna Karenina typical of your tastes, and if not, why did you choose to read and follow along? For me, I pretty much read solely classics as fiction, influenced by the quote, read the best books first because you won't have time to read them all. Ah, I think we're just reading it because of Hemingway's recommendation, aren't we? That's what I am anyway. Read the best books first. You know, I'm not all that convinced that the classics are the best books. I'm just going to put that out there. They're often the most important, like they might have been turning points in the history of literature. They might be significant as sort of a new style of genre, new book, or something like that. But they're not always the best books. I think some of them are. Some of them are just great. But some of them are... I don't know. They were just the right book at the right time. And they became popular. And then that popularity sustained the reading of that book for 100+ years. Yeah. Like, you can find a better book than... I don't know. A lot of the classics. Nifty Rific said, I had previously read Anna Karenina for a real life book club. This is a real life book club. It just happens to be online. I'm offended. I had previously read Anna Karenina for a real life book club that focused on more classical literature some years back. I guess I'd say that for leisure reading, it is typical of my tastes, but I am one of those people that have numerous current books scattered throughout the house of varying genres. In the kitchen, there is a perioperative nursing textbook. In my office, I have 2 books about a Louisiana barrier island that was destroyed by a hurricane. Tucked in my coffee table is Gun, Germs, and Steel, and on my phone, Kindle app, I am currently reading Anna Karenina and the Prince of Salt. I just read whatever when I'm thinking about it. No particular genre. Lots of half-read books on the shelf. As for philosophical books and topics of religion, I've read some religious books like the Mahabharata and enjoyed it immensely because it was a story to me. Stories about religion and religious traditions are interesting, but the philosophy of it is rather disinteresting to me as I am greatly apathetic about it in my own life. I am a Norwegian, said, I think Levin is going to find God, but not in a good long while. Accepting God will require Levin to firstly accept the irrational knowledge of faith. Levin, like Tolstoy, is learned, and intelligent, prizing his reason highly. On top of that, he would have to try and find meaning in the rites of the Orthodox Church. Tolstoy especially struggled with that last part, feeling like a hypocrite when participating in the church after he had found faith. He tried his hardest to suppress his reason and to just accept. Of course, that is impossible for a smart guy like Tolstoy, and eventually he went his own way, expressing views which got him excommunicated from the church. I don't see how you can go from being learned and intelligent and prizing reason to being religious. I don't really get that. Later on in these comments, they talk about Kierkegaard and the old leap of faith thing. But wasn't he? Excuse me, wasn't he? Oh, and an atheist or an agnostic? Well, no, he wasn't, was he? He was a existentialist. That's different. He talked about the leap of faith, saying that faith, without the element of doubt, a leap of faith is just a leap. So the most important ingredient in faith is doubt. Something like that. Anyway, religious talk bores me. As you can tell by the yawning mid-sentence trying to talk about Kierkegaard. So, let's talk about chapter 2 instead. It goes like this. On his wedding day, Levin, according to custom, the princess and Dolly insisted on his strictly conforming to custom, did not see his bride, and dined at his hotel with three bachelors who happened to drop in, Sergius Ivanich Katavasov and an old fellow student at the university, and now a professor of natural science, whom Levin had chanced to meet in the street and induced to come, and Chirikov, his best man, a Moscow magistrate and a bear-hunting comrade of Levin's. The dinner was a very merry one. Sergius Ivanich was in the best of spirits and was tickled by Katavasov's originality. Katavasov, feeling that his originality was observed and appreciated, showed it off. Chirikov gaily and good-naturedly backed up everyone else. "There now," said Katavasov, with a drawl, a habit he had fallen into when lecturing. "What a talented fellow our friend Konstantin Dmitrich used to be. I'm speaking of one who is not with us because he is no more. In those days he loved science. When he left the university he had human interests. But now half his talents are bent on self-deception, and the other half toward justification of that deception. I have never come across a more decided foe of marriage than yourself," remarked Sergius Ivanich. "No, I am no foe of marriage, but I believe in division of labour. Persons who can do nothing else must make men, and the others must help them to culture and happiness. That is how I look at it. There are hosts of aspirants who aim at mixing these two professions, but I am not one of them." "How delighted I shall be when I hear of your falling in love," said Levin. "Pray invite me to your wedding." "Oh, excuse me. I am in love already." "Yes, with a mollusk. Do you know," said Levin, turning to his brother, "Katavasov is writing a work on nutriment and..." "Oh, don't confuse matters. What does it matter what I write about? The fact is I really do love mollusks. But they would not prevent you loving a wife." "They would not, but the wife would." "Why?" "Oh, you'll soon find out. Now, you like farming, sport? Well, you just wait and see. You know, Arkhip came today to say that in Prudno there are lots of elk and two bears," said Chirikov. "Well, you have to get them without me." "There you are," said Sergius Ivanich. "Goodbye to bear hunting in future. Your wife won't allow it." Levin smiled. The idea that his wife would not allow it seemed so agreeable that he was prepared to forego the pleasure of ever setting eyes on a bear again. "All the same, it's a pity that those two bears will be killed without you. Do you remember that time in Habilovka? What fine sport we had," said Chirikov. Levin did not wish to deprive him of the illusion that somewhere there could be something good without her, therefore he said nothing. "This custom of taking leave of celibacy is not without its reason," said Sergius Ivanich. "However happy you may be, you can't help regretting your freedom. Now confess that you feel like the bridge room in Gogol's play, who jumped out of the window," teased Chirikov. "Of course, he feels so, but won't own up," said Katavasov, and burst out laughing. "Well, the window is open. Let us be off to Tver. One is a she-bear. We can go straight for the lair. Yes, let's catch the 5 o'clock train, and leave them to do as they please here," said Chirikov, smiling. "I'm ready to swear I can't find in my soul a trace of regret for my freedom," said Levin with a smile. "Ah, but your soul is in such chaos at the present moment that you are unable to find anything there. Wait till you've settled down a bit, then you'll find it," said Katavasov. "No, I should even now have some consciousness that despite my feelings, He did not wish in Katavasov's presence to use the word love, and my happiness I was yet sorry to lose my freedom, but quite on the contrary, it is precisely of this loss of freedom that I am glad. Very bad. A hopeless case, said Katavasov. Well, let us drink to his recovery, or let us wish that at least a hundredth part of his dreams come true. Even that will be such joy as was never seen on earth. Soon after dinner, the visitors left to get ready for the wedding. When he was alone, Levin, thinking of over the remarks of the three bachelors, once more asked himself whether there was in his soul any of that regret for his freedom that they had been speaking about. The question made him smile. Freedom? What is the good of freedom? Happiness consists only in loving and desiring, in wishing her wishes, and in thinking her thoughts, which means having no freedom whatever. That is happiness. But do I know her thoughts, wishes, or feelings? A voice suddenly whispered. The smile faded from his face, and he pondered. And all at once a strange sensation came over him. He was possessed by a fear and doubt of everything. Supposing she does not love me? Supposing she is only marrying me just to get married? Supposing she does not herself know what she is doing? He asked himself. She might be thinking herself, and only when she is already married, find out that she does not and never could love me. And strange and most evil thoughts about her came into his mind. He became jealous of Vronsky, just as he had been the year before, as if it had been yesterday that he saw her with him. He suspected that she had not told him the whole truth. Suddenly he jumped up. No, this won't do, he said to himself despairingly. I will go to her and tell her for the last time that we are now free and that perhaps we had better keep so. Anything would be better than continual shame, misery, and infidelity. With his heart full of despair and bitterness towards everyone, towards himself and her, he left the hotel and went to her. He found her in one of the back rooms. She was sitting on a trunk, making some arrangements with one of the maids, sorting a pile of differently coloured dresses that hung over the backs of chairs or lay in the floor. Oh, she cried when she saw him, and her face lit up with joy. Why have you... Well, this is a surprise, and I am sorting my old dresses to give them away. Ah, that is very nice, he said gloomily, with a glance at the maid. You may go, Dunyasha, I will call you, said Kitty. What is the matter with you? She asked as soon as the maid was gone. She had noticed his strange expression, at once excited and gloomy, and was seized with alarm. Kitty, I am in torture. I cannot bear it alone, he cried in a despairing tone, standing before her and looking imploringly into her eyes. Already in her loving, truthful face he could read that what he was going to tell her would lead to nothing, yet he felt that he still wanted to hear her disavowal. I have come to say that there is still time. All this business can still be put to a stop. What? I don't understand in the least. What is the matter with you? What I have said 1,000 times and cannot help thinking that I am not worthy of you. It cannot be that you have agreed to marry me. Think it over. You have made a mistake. Think it over. Well, you cannot love me. You'd better tell me, he went on without looking at her. I shall be unhappy, of course. Let them all say what they like. Anything is better than the misfortune. Anyhow, it would be better now while there is still time. I don't understand, she said, thoroughly frightened. Do you mean you refuse? Why stop? Yes, if you don't love me. Are you mad? She exclaimed, flushing with vexation. But his face was so piteous that she suppressed her vexation and, throwing the dresses on the chair, sat down closer to him. What are you thinking about? Tell me everything. I think you cannot love me. What could you love me for? Oh, God, what can I do? She cried and began to weep. Oh, what have I done? He exclaimed, and kneeling before her, he began kissing her hands. When the princess came in 5 minutes later, she found them quite reconciled. Kitty had not only assured him that she loved him, but had even given him, in answer to his question, the reasons why. She told him she loved him because she completely understood him, because she knew that it was necessary for him to love, and that all that he loved was good. This seemed quite clear to him. When the princess entered, they were sitting side by side on the trunk, sorting the dresses and disputing because Kitty wanted to give Dunyasha the brown dress she had worn when Levin proposed to her, while he insisted that that dress should not be given to anyone and that she should give Dunyasha a blue one instead. How is it you don't understand? She is dark and it won't suit her. I have considered it all. When the princess heard why he had come, she grew angry, half in fun and half in earnest, and told him to go home and dress and not to delay Kitty, whose hair had to be done by the hairdresser, due to arrive immediately. She has scarcely eaten anything all these days and has grown quite plain, and here you come and upset her with your nonsense, said he. Be off, my dear. Guilty and ashamed, but comforted, Levin returned to his hotel. His brother, Dolly, and Oblonsky, all in evening dress, were waiting to bless him with the icon. Dolly had returned home to fetch her son, who, his hair oiled and curled, was to drive in the bride's carriage and hold an icon. Then a carriage had to be sent to fetch the groomsman, and another was to take Sergius Ivanich and return again. Altogether, there were many complicated arrangements to consider. One thing was certain, there was no time to be lost, for it was already 6:30. The blessing was not a success. Oblonsky, standing in a comically solemn attitude beside his wife, took the icon and told Levin to bow to the ground, then blessed him, smiling a kindly amused smile, and kissed him 3 times, but Dolly did the same. Then she hurried away and again became confused about the arrangements of the carriages. Then this is what we must do. You go and fetch him in our carriage, and Sergius Ivanich, if he will be so kind, will go first and will send the carriage back. Of course, I shall be very pleased, and we will follow immediately with him. Have your trunks been sent off? Inquired Oblonsky. Yes, they have, replied Levin, and told Kuzma to get his things out that he might dress. Alright, there we go, another chapter down. Levin, buddy, very unattractive to be so unworthy of your own partner. It's unattractive to your partner if you keep insisting that they are beyond you. Eventually they'll start to believe it. That's the warning. That's the warning. Levin, you've been warned. Alright, have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Oh, one other thing, if you're still listening, even though I just said the sign off. If anyone wants to send in a chapter reading, a few people have inquired on the subreddit about doing a chapter reading, but are asking about how to do so. it's best if you can use something with a decent microphone, right? One easy option to do, if you don't have anything, but if you've got a decent smartphone, like a good iPhone or something like that, you could even just film yourself as like a video, a low quality video, and do it somewhere quiet so there's not a lot of background hiss, so your voice is nice and clear above everything else, and don't hold the phone because you don't want fidgeting noises. Like if you're holding the phone, the sound of your fingers against the phone will come through. Also, if you put your phone down on the table in front of you, it can become a bit muffled because the table might reverberate through the handpiece as well. So the best thing to do is to sort of mount the phone on something, you know, like even if it's just sitting on top of like a book or something like that. And then, yeah, make a video. You don't even have to be in the video. You can just be pointing at, you know, the ceiling or something. And then you read the chapter, and that should work, I think. Just listen back and make sure it's really nice and clear. I don't want it to be like telephone quality, you know, when they do like a telephone interview or something like that. that will probably be the ideal way to do it. I don't know if there's some way to do it with like a gaming headset or with Discord or something like that, but give that a try, and then just use Google Drive. Google Drive, put it in Google Drive and send me the link through Reddit. And then, I'll put it in. That easy. Or if you've got access to a microphone, do something like that. You can figure it out. It's just an audio recording, you know. It's greatly appreciated. Cool. All right. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.